This is episode 57 of the Fifth Estate Podcast. Dana Perino and behind the scenes at the Five. Hello, Fifth Estate fans. Jay Caruso here to talk to you about Blue Apron. A lot of people find cooking to be a chore. Other people find it difficult to boil water. And that's where Blue Apron comes in. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Some of the great things about it is it's affordable. For less than $10 a person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonable recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. It's flexible. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your need, and there's no weekly commitment, so you can only get deliveries when you want them. It's easy. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-proportioned ingredients and can be prepared in less than 40 minutes. One of the recipes I recently tried was the fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and Cuban bell pepper. Great stuff, and it was easy to put together. Other meals, seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers, creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges, and chili butter steaks with Parmesan potatoes and spinach. That's some good stuff. And again, it's easy. They have a card in there that you just follow. You don't have to worry about what ingredients you need and how much, because it's all there. It's all put together for you. You just have to take the ingredients, follow the instructions, and you have a wonderful meal to eat. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fifth, that's F-I-F-T-H. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so do not wait. That's blueapron.com/fifth. It is that time. Time for another episode of The Fifth Estate. My name is Jay Caruso. I am one of your co-hosts, and the other co-host is here as well, Mr. Neil Dewing. How are you?
Jay, I'm feeling frisky. How are you?
Frisky?
Oh, frisky. Very frisky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I never heard you describe yourself as frisky.
I'm trying something new. I'm not sure it's going to work out.
Oh, okay.
But we're going to go with it for now.
All right.
I'm thinking maybe the listeners will appreciate it.
A frisky Neil. Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Maybe it'll earn us one of those coveted 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Yes, speaking of, we like those reviews, and we always ask you guys at the top of the show, we're no different. Hey, if you like the show, go out there, review it, leave a 5-star review, leave a full review. It helps us. It keeps us front and center on iTunes, and we're doing pretty well, and we have you people to thank for that.
We do indeed. We do indeed. And Jay, you know, we've got a really great guest for our listeners this time around. We've got a friend of the show, someone who's been with us before. Was actually
one of my favorite people. Yeah,
of the Fifth Estate, and that person is Dana Perino, co-host of The Five, which you can watch weekdays at 9 p.m. Eastern on Fox News. Dana, hello.
Hi, guys. I am a friend of the show. You guys have a great podcast.
Yeah, and you know, you were kind enough, and you may not even remember this. You were kind enough to be a guest on our show when we had this goes way back to like 2013, Neil?
13.
Probably. Yeah.
13 or 14.
We were like, we were complete nobodies.
Well, we were all Twitter friends before we were podcast friends.
Right. Right. But you were just like really gracious and everything. And then you were on the show last year, and then everybody got really busy. You know, your things started
and
really...
And it hasn't slowed down a day since.
No, it certainly has not. It certainly has
really,
not. So,
it's exhausting.
Yeah. So The Five, which is, you know, one of the one of the most popular shows on the Fox News Channel, recently, well, several months ago, I guess, made the change to go from 5 p.m. Eastern to 9 p.m. Eastern. And so that had to be a pretty big change. What was that like to kind of go, you know, from you know, to 4 hours later to, you know, from afternoon drive time to kind of to prime time?
I was in shock when it first happened because I am very much an early to bed kind of person. And I used to do Megyn Kelly's show once a week at the 9 p.m. hour live. And I remember being here, you know, doing the 5 o'clock show, 5 p.m., and then sitting around waiting till 9 p.m. to do a hit on her show, then getting home. And then, you know, the next day I started out pretty early because I had my regular schedule. And I typically try to go to bed by 10:30. So when all the changes happened, and they happened very suddenly and without consultation, right? It was like, you guys are moving to 9 o'clock. Just add water. It was instant overnight. And my initial thought was, oh my gosh, my life has just changed for the worse, right? I wouldn't say I was negative about it. I accepted that it was in some ways seen as a promotion for the show to go from the 5 p.m. hour into prime time. Mm-hmm. It's funny in television or in entertainment that the higher up the ladder you get, the hours are worse for like a normal lifestyle. So I got home and I talked to my husband, who's been this amazing career supporter of mine from the very beginning. And he said, it'll be great. I said, what do you mean? It'll be great. And he said, well, listen, 6 years ago or 5 years ago, when we moved here for you to do the 5 full time, would you not have moved here if the show was at 9 p.m.? I thought, well, no, that's true. And he's like, we'll just adjust. And I have to say, 3 months in, I actually kind of like it. The hours have grown on me. It is definitely different. And I try to make sure that I don't work all day long. That's hard, right? Because as you guys follow the news every day.
Sure.
Things are changing by the hour. So it's been important for me to find some time to carve out where maybe I just read my book for an hour or go for a walk with Jasper and Peter for an hour or try to have lunch with somebody just so that I can break up the day a little bit. But all things considered, except for being a little sleep deprived, I actually really like the hours and I like the 9 o'clock time slot.
Well, Dana, you mentioned that, you know, back when the show first started, if it had been at 9 o'clock, you might have hesitated to join up. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how the 5 actually got started. You know, were you approached to participate? Did you help create the show or?
Well, and actually I want to just correct one thing. I actually told my husband he was correct. I would not have hesitated to come here 6 years ago if the show had been at 9 o'clock. And that was sort of his point, is that what you'd like is the show that you do, the job that you get a chance to do. So the hour didn't really matter. So it first started when, again, there was a sudden change. Glenn Beck was leaving the Fox News Channel. Roger Ailes, who was the CEO at the time, needed to fill that 5 o'clock time slot, which notoriously had been very tough to get good ratings. And Glenn Beck was one of the first to have sort of cracked that code. And I thought Roger Ailes was really smart when he said he didn't want to put just one person in a show to replace Glenn Beck, because then the comparisons would never end. And apparently, as he used to tell it, of course, he's since passed, but he used to say that he had long wanted to do an ensemble show. And he wanted a diverse array of characters with various experiences to come together and talk about the news of the day, both politics, international news, and culture, entertainment, like you would at a dinner table. So I did get a call. I'd been a Fox News contributor for, I think, 3 years, 2 or 3 years before I got that phone call. And that meant that, you know, I did regular hits, like you see various contributors pop up now and then. And then if you start to see them more regularly, chances are that means that the audience likes them, and maybe if there's an opportunity for more of a full-time gig, that will happen for them. So that's what happened to us. And when we sat down at that table, we had sort of loosely known of each other. Some people were friendly, but I didn't really know anybody. And we sat down, and we had a great time. And we can laugh a little bit. I like to say that with the five, we take the news seriously, but we don't take ourselves very seriously. So we have a little bit of a lighter lift.
So it sounds like, you know, the host kind of got along from the get-go, you know. So did it take a little while to really get comfortable, or you just kind of
got
into the groove?
We really did just hit it off, and I learned something about television, and that is that you need to have chemistry, and you need to have energy, and you need to respect each other. And we had all of that right away. And chemistry, I've learned, is not something that you can manufacture. You either have it or you don't. So we were lucky that we had it. And we had everybody came to the table with some really good experience in the various different sectors of the economy before they came to television. Two of us in politics, one, Greg Gutfeld, in publishing and media, Eric Bowling in the business world, and Kimberly was a lawyer. So you had this variety of people. Of course, Bob Beckel and Juan Williams both had Washington, D.C. experience, and Juan in particular came to it from a reporter's background. So you had all of these people. I think the hardest thing for us at first was to try to figure out sort of the rules of the road. And what I mean by that is, if you think of our show having five segments and there's five people, and that first segment's usually around 9 minutes, and the others are about 6 minutes, and then 5 minutes and 4 minutes. That means that all five people have to have a chance to speak in those minutes, and you don't want to step on each other all the time. I know viewers get frustrated when everyone's talking at once, because that means you can't hear anyone.
Right.
And when we first started, we would get calls from the control room that said, Roger says if there's any more crosstalk, this show is canceled. So that we knew to, you know, maybe like, you don't have to drive in every segment. Sometimes you sit in the back seat. But when we talked last night about the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, Kimberly Guilfoyle had been in the DA's office in Los Angeles right after that trial. And so I wanted to put her in the driver's seat so that I could hear from her personal experience. If it comes to do, it has something to do with White House communications, often they'll look to me. If it's about culture, you turn over to Greg.
Right.
So we all have expertise, and we sort of learned how to give way when we needed to.
That's great. So talk about like a typical day. So like tomorrow, you're going to get up and it's going to be a whole new day, and you know there's going to be a new show. So how do you go about, like, first, how do you kind of personally prepare? And then what is kind of like, just give us a high level view of what the process is to put the show together.
Well, I can certainly tell you how I do my day. And then I really have to have my hats off to our producers. We have a great team. They're led by Porter Berry and Nate Fredman. And Nate Fredman had been with O'Reilly up until April. And Porter had been with O'Reilly before that. So we certainly have seasoned and very good producers putting our show together for us every day. When we first started the show, at 10:30 in the morning, there would be a show call. And all of the hosts and producers would get on a conference call. And Porter Berry would run through what he thought the show was going to be like. And by about 10:36, everyone was mad at each other. I was mad at Bob or something, because we just knew what was going to happen all day. We knew what he was going to say. And so everyone got frustrated. And Porter did something I thought was really smart, and it's not typical in today's sort of meeting culture. He canceled the call. So it freed us up to just be able to prepare on our own without having to get in each other's way early in the day. So for my personal preparation, I wake up around 6 or 6:30, and I start reading right away. Peter sleeps a little bit later. So thankfully, with technology, I can lie in bed with the iPhone, and I read the Fox News Brain Room clips that come around in four different categories: domestic policy, foreign policy, Middle East news, and editorials and columns. Then I have a circuit. You know, I love Axios. I think that's a great new product.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Playbook, which I didn't look at Playbook for about 4 years, and then I came back to it in the right around January of this year, and I enjoy it more now. I read the Daily 202 from James Holman at the Washington Post. Then I always, while I'm sort of getting ready, I listen to the Daily podcast. That's the New York Times podcast. And then I sort of see if the Weekly Standard or the National Review podcast have uploaded. Yours I sort of save for the weekend because, like, the Ben Shapiro one was so good and I really wanted to concentrate, so I saved it. The weather's been nice enough now that I've been walking and I can add a couple other podcasts to my life. And I found that that's helped me just get out of reading straight news and to more thinking about what people think about the news. And then we get our show topics around 3 o'clock. We call it a rundown. And during the day, I might pitch a story or I might say, here's an angle that we could cover. In fact, today, for example, I remember that Charles Krauthammer had written a column of his when the House failed to pass the health care bill the first time. And the headline was "The Road to Single Payer." And I sent that back around to everybody today saying, when we talk about health care tonight, this could be a second layer that we talk about the bigger picture, like, okay, so this is what happened today, but what does it really mean in the grand scheme of things? And where are we going as a country when it comes to this policy decision? And then, so anyway, we get the rundown and every day it switches who leads the show. So you find out what segment it is or that you have, and then you just start reading some more. Or I'll call somebody on the Hill, or I'll call like a lawyer friend, like if we're dealing with a legal issue of the day. I have some friends in the foreign policy establishment, if you're still allowed to say that. So I go around and I try to do what I did at the White House, which is I want to be as prepared as I can possibly be so that I can be ready for anything, even if I only get to speak for 20 seconds.
So Dana, the show is broken up into blocks and mm-hmm. Each of these, you know, blocks are introduced. So who chooses who does which opening sort of introduction?
Well,
and do you guys write your own or how does that work?
No, we do. Well, it sort of depends. So Greg Gutfeld does a monologue every day. He writes his monologue. He sometimes will get ideas from the producers for what his monologues could be that day. But often he comes up with his own idea and pitches it to them. And so he writes that, I think between 9 and 10 or between 9 and 11, while he's on the stair climber, if you can imagine that.
He writes with his clipboard. Actually.
No, he has a little flowered clipboard that he takes with him. I don't know who, somebody gave it to him and he said, well, no one's ever going to steal it. So that's why he always uses it. So he writes that. So in that regard, so everybody knows on the show that that's going to be his block for the day. Sometimes that will lead. And other times it will be later in the show. For example, tonight he's leading on the healthcare issue. And then it's sort of just random. If you have a particular expertise, sometimes you lead that block. But I also don't always like that because if you have a particular expertise, you don't want to be the one driving the questions. You want to be the one answering or debating. So, but we know each other well enough that we can defer to each other when there's something. And sometimes, like in a commercial break, we might say, I've got a good point on this, so come to me. And I've never had an instance where that wasn't just easy. And people really accommodate each other. The other thing that happens is that we're pretty competitive with our One More Things, which is that last segment of the show where it's just like a little funny, silly, or interesting thing that you mm-hmm. want to bring up. But it's also always been one of our highest rated segments of our show. So the bar is set pretty high for One More Thing.
Oh, as far as what kind of content you're going to have? So,
yeah, like for now, Jesse Waters has me on the run for better dog videos.
So, what about, all right, so this is something that's interesting. There's always different bumper music you hear coming in or going out of the
yes.
show. So how do you choose that? Or I'm assuming, because I know there's some country music that I'm almost positive that is your
choice.
That's
always for me.
Yes.
No one else ever gets country music, but Greg chooses his music. I don't necessarily choose the songs, but they know I like country music.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll send a list saying, here's 20 songs that might be good for this month. And then there's all these rules that the producers have to follow
uh-huh.
because you can't play a certain song more than once every 4 weeks or something like that. So the producers, it's kind of a pain for them to try to find the perfect little bit of a song that they're going to play for you. But it's always kind of fun. You can see people get energized when their song comes on, especially if you don't know what it's going to be, as I don't. Greg also chooses funny TV jingles.
Oh, right.
You sort of have to remember, yeah. Oh, my gosh, that's from Bewitched or whatever.
That's great.
So Dana,
sometimes Juan, they give Juan the Motown music. We're always like, oh, of course, Juan, you got the Motown, and he just laughs.
So Dana, if you had to sort of just pick something from the entire experience, you know, what do you like the most about doing this kind of work, you know, working on a show like The Five, working with these people, do you find you like the give and take or?
Yeah, I love it. So I just signed a new 3-year contract here, and I've never worked in a job for this long, ever. So we just passed our 6th year. I just signed a 3-year contract. I'm hoping The Five, you know, keeps going.
Congratulations.
And when I decided that was, you know, the best thing for me for the next foreseeable future, you know, for the next 3 years, I really walked all the way around and thought, well, you know, what am I doing with my life? Is this like the best possible thing I could do? And there's times when I think, gosh, you know, maybe I really should move to Africa since I have such an interest, you know, in helping, especially with mercy ships, and think, well, gosh, should my husband and I go do that, you know, while we're healthy and can do it? I always feel guilty, like I'm not living up to my full potential. I guess probably most people feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, this job is really perfect for me, and it puts together all of the pieces of my career up to now. Like all of my interests and all of my experience culminates in this thing that I do on The Five. You know, I started reading the newspapers with my dad in 3rd grade. I had to read 2 articles to discuss with him before dinner. I had to pick one from the Rocky Mountain News or the Denver Post. And then we would always watch the Sunday shows together. And my sister used to get mad because I wanted to go to early church service so I could get home to watch in time to watch Meet the Press. And then I went to on the speech team, and I was in my event was extemporaneous speaking, where you study all week long current events, and then when it's time for the tournament, you pick 3 questions out of a hat, 3 topics that you can choose from, and from there you have 30 minutes to research and write and memorize a 5 to 7 minute speech. I go to journalism school. I don't end up doing that, but I end up doing spokesperson work. And when I did that transition, I thought, oh my gosh, now I'm never going to get to work in television news. And then I become White House press secretary, and now I get to do television news with some experience behind me in expressing an opinion that is based on something that is actually real. And there's really nothing else I want to do right now. I love this job.
That's great. And you.
So I feel pretty lucky. I'm pretty lucky that way. You know, to have done it for 6 years and to feel like I have more to give and am excited to get up every day. And in some ways, I think the show moving to 9 p.m. was reinvigorating. The only person that thinks they like change is a baby. But we all need to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
We all need to grow. And sometimes even just changing your hours can give you just a new outlook on life and work.
Sure. And plus, you know, you work hard as well. I mean, so there's that. I mean,
but it's so fun. It doesn't necessarily feel like working.
That's the great part is that if you're doing something that you love doing, it's not really work, but you're still putting in the effort and that shows. And
yeah.
And so I am so
excited every day when I get to do this stuff. I mean, you guys are too. And then I added that podcast with Chris Starwalt. I don't know if you ever have a chance to listen to that, but that's really fun. I do that once a week, and I have a chance to fill in for some anchors once in a while when they need to take a day off. And so there's enough variety to keep me interested.
Now, what about that real quick? Just kind of take a side note here. What is it like when you're doing a show where you're the host, where it's just you and bringing other people in? I don't want to say what you like better, but obviously it's different.
It's just so different,
yeah.
Right? I mean, if you think about it on The Five, let's just say that you forget what you're going to say. Right, you can't find that word. Mm-hmm. There's somebody there to catch you.
Right.
If you do that on when you're anchoring a show, like when if I were filling in for Martha McCallum, and I totally choke, there's no one to help me. So the energy level is different. The preparation, I think, is a lot more different because then you are asking questions to solicit information that will be interesting to the viewer. And the other thing I've had to really learn or just keep in mind is that while I love to read news, I like to watch it too, but I really love to read it. This is a television show, and so it's a visual medium. And so I'm always trying to think about what's the best way to show this story as well. And that's been a challenge for me sometimes because I think that I was so used to the print world and the written word that that's been something I kind of have to focus on.
So Dana, before we move on to the next segment of our show, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I was wondering if maybe you could give us one of your corny jokes.
Oh, okay. I love corny jokes. So sometimes I do that for one more thing, Dana's corny joke of the day. And everyone rolls their eyes, but they actually love it, maybe except for Gutfeld. So one of my favorites is, why did the chicken fall into the well?
I don't know.
Because it couldn't see that well.
That's a nice one.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
Pretty good.
All right, so let's shift gears a little bit. And you know, you're the author of a book, and the good news is, which I read and I loved, but you also wrote a book about, like, America's favorite dog, Jasper.
Yeah, Jasper. I mean, what a thing, right? Everybody wants to write a book about their dog. Everyone loves their dogs, but that was great. And in fact, the only reason that I was able to make that book really different is that I met somebody through Twitter because he was a fan of The Five, and he's this master Photoshop professional. Actually, he does it as a hobby. It looks extremely professional. It's just something that he taught himself. He has a day job. And he would just start doing these pictures of Jasper in all these sorts of different scenarios, like debating or, you know, giving a State of the Union address. It was one of the funniest things that I would see. And so I reached out to him and we worked on the book together.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So, so... Yeah, it's funny. Are there ever videos that you capture of Jasper that are just kind of boring? Because they always seem to be fun. He's always running around, diving into something, looking at something.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like the one I did recently where I pretended I was David Attenborough and I was narrating a documentary, but I called it a dogumentary. And I was talking about how Jasper loves to hunt for fish. And just as I said that, he pounces in the lake, and I thought, if the Five ever ends, maybe the Animal Planet will pick me up.
He's a natural. So, well, you know, maybe could you tell us about Jasper? I mean, how old is Jasper? You know, how long has he been with you? That sort of thing.
Well, he's 5 and a half. It's interesting. So he came. He has been a part of the Five really since the Five started. When I moved to New York, I came with my 13-and-a-half-year-old Vishla named Henry, who had been with me in all those White House years. It was pretty famous in Washington, you know, just around town. This is before Twitter and everything. And so people on the Five knew about Henry. And when Henry died one Sunday morning, it was a shock to my husband and me and to the Five. And they put together a little slideshow of him for my One More Thing. And I was teary-eyed. I didn't quite spill over, but teary-eyed. And, you know, your audience gets to know you on The Five, unlike other shows. Well, I shouldn't say unlike other shows, but I feel like The Five allows you to just open up and be kind of vulnerable to your audience and to your fans. And so a couple of months later, Jasper comes on the scene. And the first day we brought him home, I brought him on the show. He was a tiny little puppy. And I did. Do you remember the show Red Eye that Gutfeld used to do?
Uh-huh.
So one night I was on that. And he was talking about how this actress in Hollywood hated to have her dog's photo taken by the paparazzi. And he said, Dana, would you be like that with Jasper? And I said, of course not. I will share my dog with America. He could be America's dog. So that's how he got his nickname of being America's dog. And so I just get a kick out of posting his pictures. And I like to have him on the show every once in a while. He's kind of due for a visit, actually.
Does he get his own? Does he get his own fan mail?
Sorry.
Does he get his own fan mail?
Oh my gosh! My office is filled with stuff for Jasper and about Jasper. Jasper paintings. In fact, I'm looking at one right now. There was a painting that a lady made during her cancer treatments when she was in rehabilitation, and she mailed it to me. It's fabulous. There's one of Henry. Let's see. There's ornament. Oh, right now here. There's a feather. Somebody painted Jasper's face on a feather. He has needle points. There's a wood carving of him right there. Oh my God. They're everywhere. Everywhere I turn, there's Jasper stuff in my office. So it's been an interesting way for me to connect with people that had nothing to do with President Bush or being a Republican, but it was about being an American woman that loves her dog. And you can connect with a lot of people through that.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that you talk about in your book is the way that dogs can bring, you know, not just families together, but people, you know, even across the political divide, you know, people love dogs, especially dogs with a lot of character, as Jasper has. So, you know, do you have a lot of people, you know, from the other side of the aisle who enjoy Jasper?
Yes. You know, dogs can be a great equalizer. And when I wrote about Jasper in that book, Let Me Tell You About Jasper, How My Best Friend Became America's Dog, one of my points was that it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. People love dogs. And Donna Brazile and I have long been good friends because the first thing we always say to each other is, how's Chip? How's Henry? Or how's Jasper? When her dog died, I called her right away. I said, I'm so sorry to hear about Chip. And so, yeah, I've connected with a lot of people about Jasper, and it's just a great icebreaker and a great political equalizer.
Yeah, I think everybody can relate to that. You know, it helps people to relate to one another, no matter where they're coming from.
Yep, definitely. You guys have dogs?
I do. I have two Westies, actually. So
nice.
They're little white fluff balls and they're terrible. They're really the worst, I have to say. Francine is 12 years old and she does not listen. I know she can hear me, but I know she's not listening.
Yeah, they decide they definitely become choosy listeners.
Mm-hmm. And Macintosh is 4 or 5 and he's a spaz, a total spaz. He's, you know, Francine is a female and Mac is a male and very different temperaments. It's exhausting, I got to tell you.
Yeah. And I have a dog, Lucky, who was my mother's dog before she passed away and we inherited him. And, he's an idiot. He's kind of like a mutt. He's got some Jack Russell in him, but he's really an idiot. We've been at the same place now for 2 years and he still barks when the mail truck goes by. It's like, haven't you learned what that is yet? And still does it. I'm going to capture him on video doing this weird thing that he does when he starts barking. He'll do this thing and then he'll walk around like this whining kind of growl thing. I've never heard any other dog do it. And every time I try to get him on video doing it, he stops. It's like he knows. Dogs know when a camera is pointing at them. You ever notice that? They kind of realize it.
Yeah,
they're like, and they start
Jasper
turning away.
Jasper refuses to look in the camera.
Exactly. It's weird. They're like, oh, yeah.
And I have to, you know, if he takes a glance and he sees the camera, he'll turn right away. It's like we're going to steal his soul or something.
Absolutely.
I don't know what that's about. It's so funny. But I, you know, if you take enough pictures, you can always capture them.
Yeah.
And I think the internet is the best part about the internet is the dogs.
Oh, I agree.
Videos, dog pictures, dog like all the dog stuff is my favorite part.
Yep.
Definitely better than the cat videos.
Yeah, my sister's a big on her cats,
I should say.
I mean, those are fine, but dogs are definitely better. So, folks, we recommend you definitely pick up a copy of Let Me Tell You About Jasper, How My Best Friend Became America's Dog by our guest, Dana Perino. And Dana, we have one more thing.
Okay.
Our own one more thing.
Okay.
And this is a gotcha question, and we spring this on all our guests. It's a matter of pretty vital cultural importance, and the answer you give, it matters.
Wait, have I answered this question before?
No, you answered a similar question, but this is same concept, different subject.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure, but we believe that you can handle it.
Okay.
So, Dana Perino, which is better, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Oh, I'm going to say the Rolling Stones.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
You made me.
I saw something on Twitter about this the other day. Wasn't Ben Shapiro talking about this?
He refused to answer. He said that he hated the Beatles.
He hated them both.
Okay.
He wanted to talk about Beethoven or somebody, and that was not an option. But he decided that he hated the Beatles more than he hated the Rolling Stones. And so, yes. So he went. So I got a point from Ben Shapiro, and I've gotten a point now from you.
What's the count stand now?
I'm definitely losing.
Yeah, as usual.
As usual.
I think that here's the thing. The Beatles are just slightly... they're everywhere, and it's overrated, and it's annoying.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're making Neil very happy.
I wish...
But they're both British.
They are both British.
And my husband... I wonder what my husband would say.
Hmm.
You know, he's British.
That's true. You'll have to ask him and report back.
Let's text him real quick, see if he responds. Because he will have I'm gonna say, what's better, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
And we're if Peter weighs in, we're counting it, Neil.
Fair enough.
Okay. How did you guys come to this? Like, why are you having this debate?
Well, you know, Dana, Jay and I, despite outward appearances of getting along famously, we disagree bitterly on so many things. So many things. And
how did you two come together in the first place?
Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter.
Twitter. Oh my gosh, that's great.
It's the matchmaker. So, but you know, I feel like I should ask Dana whether she thinks Seinfeld is overrated. I'm just curious.
I don't. I think it's overwatched.
But it's not overrated as a show.
No.
You lose,
I think it's
Neil.
A great show, but when people have watched it, like my sister, who has watched it every episode, every night, she watches the rerun. She could write the scripts for you verbatim in her head. I think it's overwatched, and that, I think, waters it down. But she never tires of it.
I have always said it's a cultural phenomenon, because here it is. The show has been off the air for almost 20 years, and people still reference it in conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
People
Jay,
still say yada, yada, yada.
Oh, come on.
You know that's true, Neil. That's why you hate it.
I know. I do. Hey, look, I got smoked on that topic, too. So, you know, it's just opening old wounds.
Well, one thing that's interesting about Peter, so he is 18 years older than me, and we did not meet until 1997, and I moved there in 1998, so right around there is when the Seinfeld finale was.
Right.
And so the reruns had not... Britain didn't air Seinfeld at the time that it was running. The reruns only started after Peter and I left the UK. So he is kind of a Seinfeld cultural void.
Oh.
So you can't even... say, you know,
lucky guy.
Like if I say I really want a big salad, and I mean big salad, he doesn't understand how funny that is. So we have
Neil doesn't
a little
either.
Bit of a divide.
See, Neil went silent. He has no idea what you're talking about.
No clue.
Really?
See?
I feel like we'd get along. I feel like we'd on the side.
Well, he's not written back, but I will let you know what he says.
All right.
Yeah. We'll get the report back. But yeah, Dana, thank you so much for being with us for this episode. It was a joy to have you once again.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for always, you know, keeping us all entertained and informed. You guys get great guests and have good interviews.
Oh,
thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. So you know, this will be your second time on the show, and we hope it will not be your last.
It won't be. I promise.
Great. All right. Well, Dana, thank you again very much. We really appreciate it. We'll let you go because you know you got a show starting in about 48 minutes.
Yeah, but better go get some makeup on.
Yeah, better go do that. And, well, you take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Good show there.
Yeah, I'd say, Jay, that show went very well.
Yeah, it did. it worked out well. She's a great
right
guest.
Right through the moment when the Rolling Stones notched a point as superior to the Beatles.
I know, but we'll have to wait and hear back from what Peter says. That'll be interesting.
That will be interesting. So. That will be very interesting.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week. You know, it's going to be a crazy, hectic few weeks. As you know, I'm starting. Anybody that doesn't know, I'm starting.
Yeah, you do have some news. Why don't you?
I do
share
have some
news.
I'm starting a new job in several weeks, on July 31st. Actually, it requires me to move to Texas, Dallas specifically. I'm going to be on the editorial board of the Dallas Morning News and be one of their editorial writers as well.
Well, and congratulations to you for that, Jay. You've definitely earned it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was one of those things that just came out of like nowhere. I mean, it really did. It was something that somebody sent on an email list. And I was like, yeah, I'll send in my resume.
Well, that's what opportunities do. They sometimes spring up and you got to jump on them.
Yeah. And it's one of those email lists that I can contemplate constantly like quitting, because sometimes it gets a little ridiculous. So just think, if I would have quit like in April, I wouldn't have ever seen that. One of those things, yeah.
What do they call it? The vicissitudes of life.
Yeah, or the Matrix, something.
The
yeah.
Matrix.
So, all right, everyone. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of The Fifth Estate. I'm Jay Caruso for Neil Dewing. We'll see you next time.